Hello and welcome to another episode of Don't Be a Stranger, the Jack Bowler podcast. It's a double upload month, ladies and gentlemen. I said it would happen, and it's happening. It's happening in May. Right now, double upload. You're welcome. Who would have thought it? Anyway, I'm really excited about this episode. I am so excited about this episode to come out. This episode is with one of my best friends, Andrew Cross. Now, this is someone that I will now refer to as Crossy for the rest of the podcast and for the rest of this intro. But Crossy is someone that has been in my life for, well, for over half of it, really. And he's someone that is in my social circle, someone that I chat to pretty much every day, but he doesn't live around here anymore. So it's took a lot of planning and a lot of organising to get him up to Huddersfield and to sit down and see me for a little more than a couple of hours. And we managed to go for a few beers and then record a podcast. So it does get a little bit ropey in parts, this one. But Crossy is someone that we went to the same high school, we went to the same sixth form, same university, we lived together at university, and now he is living down south, living out his dream job. And we talk about that on the podcast, how he's adjusted to that and how he's working with the balance of going to luxurious places, reporting on a sport that he loves, but also being there to work. And we also roll it back as well and talk about how he and I first bonded through music and football, playing for the same football team during our teens. And we also talk about his role in our social circle, in our close sort of social circle, as this old wise man sort of figure, the kind of person we turn to for advice. Although up until maybe 12 months ago, I think it would be fair to say that he doesn't really have or hadn't really had that much life experience in terms of what we discuss and what we ask for advice. So we sort of touch on that a little bit as well and talk about how and why he thinks he's positioned in that way and why he thinks that he is that older, wise man sort of figure. And on the notion of that, being an older guy, he's actually the youngest in our friendship group, but nevertheless, he's the one that's had the most injuries because he played so much sport that he was younger. And we talk about his injuries, talk about how he battles back from him, talk about how he has a thyroid problem. And we also talk about how he managed to dislocate his knee on the Alps in Italy. So I struggle to get through it. I think it's absolutely hilarious, but he's one of my best friends, so he doesn't mind me laughing at it, I think. Well, he tolerates it, at least. Anyway, I'm rambling on. Sit back, relax, enjoy the bassy tones of Andrew Cross, and if you like what you hear of those bassy tones, go ahead and give a 5-star review on whatever platform you're listening to. If you've got any questions or any queries and you want to maybe come on the podcast, go ahead and slide in my DMs on Instagram. That's at Jack Without the C. Enjoy. Drop the bass. Andrew Cross. Crossy. Bye. We're rolling. We're rolling. We're rolling. So,
come on, man.
I've got this. So this week, here with Crossy, and I'm going to call you Crossy. There's no point in calling you Andrew Cross, because that's not your name. Not in my eyes, anyway.
It's almost too formal.
It is too formal. I call you Andrew as a joke a lot of the time.
But you don't even call me Andy.
No, I go, hello, my name's Andrew. This is my go-to Andrew Cross impression. Hello, my name's Andrew. Hello, nice to see you. Can I have the aisle seat, please, because of my thyroid problem?
The long-lost joke of me apparently having a thyroid problem.
You do have a thyroid problem.
Which is completely untrue.
No, you have a thyroid problem.
Putting it on the table right now.
Oh, this is so good. I've not seen you in how long? Well, I haven't seen you since Christmas, but since Christmas. This is probably our third or fourth meeting in the past 12 months, which I think is crazy.
Yeah, which is mad.
It's really crazy because you and I go way back, best part of
14 years? 15?
Yeah, it seems like that much now anyway. But yeah. I can sit here today and be happy in the fact that I consider you one of my oldest and best friends, and it's super cool to have you on now, especially given that you don't live anywhere near me anymore. So, I mean,
As it is with most of these podcasts, I've normally made a list ahead of the time.
Mr. Organised.
Mr. Organised. I mean, we should say at this point we're recording at 10:30 on the 19th of April.
On Good Friday.
On Good Friday. We've had a few beers, we've had some food, and you're crashing here tonight whilst you made the long journey up.
5 hours from the south.
How was that for you?
Yeah, it could have been better. Wow. Yeah, it was pretty hot. Because you're just in the car for 5 hours on the motorway.
Yeah.
In, I think, there was about 4 or 5 accidents. So, yeah, could have been
that you caused, or...?
No. That I witnessed.
Right, shit.
Yeah. But thankfully, here in one piece.
It's good to have you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Hey, there we go. So, we'll just sort of... We mentioned it there, that we've been friends for the best part of 15 years. And just in terms of the dynamic that we have in our friendship group, there's... In terms of my close friends that I will say from like that I've sort of grew up with, you're an integral part of that. And there's you, there's Rob, who I also want to get on to the podcast at some point. And there's also, in terms of like the progression of that group, there's obviously us three that are our own little unit, I guess, mm-hmm. from back home, El Porto. And then there's our friend Adam as well, who's like a mutual friend of all three of us from university. So... We've all got sort of our own individual roles in that group, but
yeah.
We've dubbed you the granddad of the group.
Correct. Yeah.
So why do you think that you've been positioned in that way?
I think it started as being like Mr. Sensible at some point, purely because...
Crumble's just had a shit and she's cleaning her litter tray.
This is literally live in the studio.
Here she is. She like this is the first time I've recorded back in the humble abode of mine. So it's bound to have a little bit of
crumbleness.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, you can't have the podcast without crumble, even if it's in the intro or if it's in the outro or even if it's here. So. She's having a right old go at that. Go on, lass. Go on. Get stuck in.
Back to
what we said. Yeah, so you're the granddad of the group. Why do you think you're the granddad of the group?
It was kind of a bit of being probably generally sensible. I'd say sensible is probably a way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think it was a way that, especially with you, Rob... Not necessarily Adam, but definitely you and Rob. Like, you two would come to me for, like, advice on stuff.
Yeah.
And it literally could be anything. From life experiences to, let's say, insurance over houses over cars to general life issues. And I was kind of, in a way, the level head that would kind of look at it from both sides, take several steps back and see the bigger picture.
So how do you approach that role, though? Because it's something that we've positioned you in a way of that, and we've turned to you for that sort of advice. And it might be fair or unfair to say that in terms of what we have experienced, whether it be... It's like in terms of life experience anyway, we position you as the granddad of the group and the level-headed one. But yet we will turn to you for that advice on those subjects, whereas we'll go out and go and do whatever. But maybe you're someone that hasn't taken as much of an opportunity, maybe up until recently anyway, to have that sort of life experience yourself.
Yeah.
So how do you position yourself as someone that's level-headed and that can give advice when you haven't necessarily had that experience yourself?
Like, this will sound really corny, but I think from... reading a lot in terms of online stuff to books and watching a lot of TV and film. Yeah, you don't get stuff from films or TV, but you get a rough judgment of how, in a way, in inverted commas, life plays out.
Yeah.
And how, let's take relationships play out.
Mm.
And that kind of, I put that together with a bit of reading and then probably from... kind of experience of others, not necessarily you and Rob, and that kind of gives me an overround view, which is what I use as, right, this is what it could be, or this is what it might be.
Mm. That's my beer can, sorry.
It does sound pretty vague, but that's the way I've always kind of approached it.
So, in terms of, like, the... Hi, Crumble. You're right. Have you just done a shit? Was it alright? Okay, off you pop. In terms of, say, the stuff that you've read, is there a notable book or a scripture or there's something that you've read that stands out that you can sort of...
Honestly, no. No, I think it's a mixture of reading... I think Reddit is just one of these things that, because there's so many users, it's so international.
And everyone's free to post what they
want. Everybody posts what they want. Stuff. And in a way, if you read so much different viewpoints, you kind of club all them together and you'll get, let's say, an overall view of one side, and then you read the other side, you get an overall view of the other. And yeah, it's not the perfect view, but it's something that I've always used as a bit of kind of, I don't know.
Influence,
yeah.
Yeah. I think as well...
I've also never thought about it. I've just... It's kind of... Maybe it's just gone off instinct, and it's kind of what my moral compass is almost telling me. And I've thought, yeah, that's what it is. And that's how I've taken it.
And I think that sort of delving into that a bit more is like the idea that in terms of what you studied at uni and what you're involved with now, like the idea of journalism, you're someone that's always spectator.
Yeah, and you're always questioning and expecting the unexpected, preparing for the unexpected.
So when you have someone approach you with a specific problem or anything like that, it's something that you can address with a level head because you haven't got a bias.
Yeah,
because you can look at it objectively and subjectively.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're in a position where you can give the advice, look at both sides of it, and pick the portrayal you think that is not only the best advice, but is the best suited for the addressing whatever's being discussed or considered and stuff.
I think with the job, it helps analyse both sides and the whole picture. So you're getting you or Rob, for an example, you're getting not just your side, but you're getting somebody else's side. So it's more rounded, and that helps with the overall analysis of it without making it sound too kind of sciencey.
Yeah. I don't really do well with science. I mean, I got to see it.
I don't think either of us did well with science at school.
No.
Yeah.
We had a fun time, though.
Oh, yeah.
But you were in my science class, I can't even remember.
I feel like this is a nice segue.
Okay, what's the segue you want
to... Segue straight into school.
Oh, I was going to come on to that later, but it's natural progression, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've mentioned there already that we've known each other for the best part of 15 years, and, you know, it was some start of high school where you and I first really interacted with one another, and I think it was a combination of things. Number one, I had just joined the football team we was on.
Correct.
And you were the captain of that team.
I was. Five years, proud. Still holding on to it.
Hey, I retired at like what, age 16? I was like, I'm done, my legs are done.
Yeah.
You know, I can't do it anymore. And I went into a punditry and then I went into podcasting as a result. No, but we obviously went with that. I also thought as well, because you and I were, in terms of our last names, were very close in the register. So you and I.
Yeah, we were.
I think that's one of the main catalysts for friendships as well. And I think it's really interesting the fact that whatever your name is can introduce you to people that are of a similar, you know, group together. So like all the A's, B's and C's all are on one table, then all the D's and etc. So it's just how you end up getting positioned. You end up forming bonds with people because of the name that you possess, which I think is
it's a good point, and it's probably something I've never thought of.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, how do you think then, so what's your perspective in terms of our friendship, which is a massive fucking question.
This is put right on the spot.
Yeah.
Sport and music, they were pretty big.
Well, it's weird though, because you and I have completely different music tastes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we have similarities in like a grey area, like in terms of certain bands and genres and stuff. But, you know, in terms of the stuff that I listen to and the stuff that you listen to, say, like you mentioned traveling, like what's your, I'm going off loads of tangents here, but we'll bring it all back. Like, but in terms of like your traveling playlist, and like you have, I know you, in your car, you've made loads of mixtapes and loads of mix CDs of stuff, the different genres or different bands that you just have for driving and stuff like that. Like with me, I've got different playlists on Spotify that I'll shuffle and it'll be just genre based, but the stuff that you listen to and the stuff that I listen to, I think are going to be completely different things.
Well, I remember back in the day.
Back into
today. This is like 14 years ago. If you go back to your first year of high school, that we would...
14? When did you start high school? 11, innit? 11 going on 12, innit?
Yeah, but 14 years ago.
Oh, shit, yeah.
come on, mate. What a bit. yeah, we would swap CDs to...
Oh, yeah, we did.
We used to do that quite a bit. Like, I remember getting a couple of Kaiser Chiefs and Kasabian off you, and you got a couple of, like, Radio 1 Live Lounge covers.
Oh, Radio 1 Live Lounge covers.
When they were good.
Then when they were sick. They were quality.
But yeah, our music tastes are quite... Now, anyway, they are pretty different.
But it's like, even prior to you coming up today, I think because I had the knowledge, and because a lot of like the indie music that I listened to growing up, and like I associate that a lot with you, and I associate that with that sort of transitional period of listening, helping me then listen to even heavier stuff and that kind of thing. So the fact that you introduced that sort of thing and we shared that earlier today before you arrived, I'd like, oh, I'm going to put the indie playlist on because Cross is coming over, and I had loads of Kasabian, Kaiser Chiefs, and Falls and stuff like that. It was just nice to say, like, I know Cross is coming over, so I feel like in a weird sort of way, like,
you have
connected.
My vibe on.
Yeah,
already.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely, it was sick.
I think, especially at the start of school, there was like a lot of indie kind of like we focused on.
Yeah,
but I definitely think that football and sport was the main kind of. Kind of home for, like, in a way, the relationship.
So we saw each other, you know, once a day for 5 days straight, and then on a Saturday, well, we'd even see each other in the evenings for training.
Yeah, for training, yeah, yeah.
And then after training, then you've always got the match day on either a Saturday or a Sunday, sometimes both days if that's the circumstances. But anyway, I digress. But yeah, so the fact that we see each other pretty much 6 days out of 7 days a week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you just end up forming friendships, and I think that you're someone that's very easy to look up to because you're, what, 6 foot?
Three? So at the age of 11, 12, I was, what, 6 foot one? And now I'm 6 foot three. Yeah, say that.
So it's quite easy to look up to you then?
Literally on a physical point, yeah.
But what, in terms of, like, the bond that football has, and, like, not just between you and I, but, say,
the dressing room kind of atmosphere.
Yeah, I mean, like, responsibility as a captain, like, I've never been in a position where I've had to be a captain of a football team before, as much as maybe I'd love to, but how does, although it was obviously, you're like ages between like 11, 12 through to like 15, 16, like, how does that responsibility fall on you, and like, what does that experience like, and how do you think, is that then a mentality or something that you've then attached to yourself going forward in terms of how you approach other works and stuff like that? Like,
I feel like
it shapes you, or I feel like it would anyway.
You're not, how I see it anyways, you're not given the captaincy because they're wanting to shape you into a captain. You're already some form
ahead of a curve.
Yeah, you're already some form of leader or some, like, you've got that personality and those traits. Whether that be, like, let's take football for the example, whether that be the loudest person on the pitch but leading by example as well.
Mm.
Now, when we used to play, I wasn't the loudest person on the pitch.
No,
I know
I think
that for
I
a fact.
I know I was in training.
But when it came to pre-match and post-match, I was pretty vocal. Mm. In training as well. And I think during the match, I'd probably more lead by example than rather shout my head off and run around like a headless chicken.
Let your football talk, do the talking.
Yeah.
Smashing top bins for 25 yards. That doing little samba dances for you. Like
free kicks for days. That's what it was.
I just remember one match that we played. I think it was against... was against Upton.
It was against Upton at the Dale camp.
At the
barracks.
Dale camp. This is Dale camp.
The pitch was sand.
My dad will love this right now that we mentioned the Dale camp. He'd love this. Right. Shout out to Ian Bowler. You'll be on the podcast soon.
It's like a sand-based pitch. It never used to get waterlogged.
Oh, I remember, actually, you know, it's really funny. Terrible. I remember that now. I kept winding up Russ, our manager, because I kept saying it was my dad's birthday. Yeah, and he was fuming, and I was like, yes. He was like, yes, yes, we know it's your dad's birthday. He's like, yeah, I know, but it's my dad's birthday, so... We've got to wish him happy birthday.
I know the goal you're going to mention as well. And it's the one that... It came across from the right. I was sneaking up on the back post. The whole defence had shifted to the front post. And I just ghosted in. Left foot, bottom corner. And us two just ran off and did a little samba dance. Nothing wrong with that.
Oh, it was beautiful.
You've got to celebrate these
no choreographing finishes. Whatsoever. Completely impulsive. We didn't practice that at all, did we, Cross?
No, not at all.
Oh, that was pants. Did we win that match? I don't remember.
Hopefully.
Yeah. It's not. We didn't win many matches.
No, there was a time where we won under 15s League and Cup double.
Yeah, I don't think I was in the team then.
I just remember that season quite well. Yeah. That was a good season.
I think I joined the season after. No wonder we went downhill after that. I think my best game was when I scored two goals which should have had a hat-trick and I sky one over the bar from 3 yards out.
Everybody's been there.
Oh. Well, it was just the fact that when I look back on it, I was like, I could have had a hat-trick then. That was a team that came over from Runcorn, and then I remember like chatting to some of the players just like before a goal kick was being taken, and it's like they turned up late, and I was like, you took your time to get here, and it was like, I'm just come from Runcorn. I was like, fucking hell, Runcorn. It's like, all right then. And then I think we beat them like 6 or 7 nil. And it was like, oh, you drove all this way.
I think it was like a dark,
Cheshire Cup or something
like
that.
Yeah, it was like a mustardy yellow and black striped kit, I think.
I remember it being white. Our kit was blue, wasn't it? Who were we sponsored by? We had like...
Oh, so we had Tropicana. We had Asda Price.
I remember...
And we had... yes, yeah, because it used to be the classic... That's Asda Price. Like, oh, just yes. To go with the adverts.
I remember Tropicana one. I remember that one as well.
Then there was always the classic kind of like... General Builders, which is literally one of the lads' dad's company.
Yeah.
And they used to like put the money in to sponsor it.
Well done, that man.
But that's what junior football was. Didn't have any of these. Etihad Airways. not back then, anyway.
So we mentioned there about the captaincy, you sort of led by example. And I think in terms of like the pretense we've had where we spoke about you and I in terms of where you... like situate and position yourself in our friendship group as like the granddad and the like all seeing sort of Gandalf like character, I guess we could say. You don't necessarily say too much, but when you do,
I'm very much a listener and kind of always have been.
I think that's the reason why, well, this is my assumption, this is one of the reasons why I think it leads into the job you're doing now and why you're positioned down south. So why don't you tell all the listeners what you're doing now and where you are?
So currently travelling Europe and the world covering golf.
You fucking prick.
it is nice.
I'm not bitter,
I can't
honest.
Lie. Yeah, so working for the European Tour, covering the Challenge Tour and the Stage Tour. It's nice.
How many countries did you visit last year?
Off the top of my head, I'm going to have to count them.
Rattle them off one by one. Say them out loud. Go
right,
on.
You keep talking, I'll think.
Keep talking, I'm just going to put you off. Why don't you say them out loud?
All right, so you got England, hey, Scotland, hey, Ireland, hey, Switzerland, hey, Italy, hey, France, hey, Spain, what? Portugal.
Did you go Croatia?
Denmark. Went to Denmark twice.
Twice? Jesus Christ.
That was it. Yeah, 9. It was 9 countries, 14 tournaments.
So it was just predominantly in Europe, wasn't it?
Yeah, predominantly in Europe. And this year, I'm hopefully... it's on the schedule at the moment. I'm lucky enough to be off to Mauritius and Seychelles in December.
So 9 countries. So that was just predominantly in Europe. Have you got any other trips planned for?
So yeah, there's a few this year. I'm outside off to, so as of recording in April, I'm off to Spain in
two weeks.
And then off to Czech Republic in
4 weeks. Say hi to Vladimir Smitsa and Patrick Berger for me.
What players. What absolute players they were. There is a lot of travel in it, but it's enjoyable.
How do you like prepare yourself for that, because I've done long haul flights and I've done them quite regularly now, at least once a year and stuff. So to go on so many flights in such a short period amount of time, and obviously going there to do a job and stuff, it's like completely different circumstances. So how do you cope with that?
All right, well, take it to the very, very basics. When you get on a plane, mm-hmm. you might have, let's say, some, and you're going to laugh at this, I know you are, some like hard-boiled sweets so that your ears don't pop. I just don't bother with that anymore.
You're such an old man.
Like, flying is probably...
Any word, there's originals.
Like, I probably use a plane. Like, last year, I probably used planes more than I used trains. So it was
automobiles as well.
So driving, flying, and then trains.
That's crazy.
So it becomes second nature. Well, not... Yeah, I'd say it becomes second nature in terms of getting to an airport and just going straight through, like straight to departures. Like, there's none of this getting to the airport 2 hours in advance to enjoy the departure lounge. No, just
get. So what time do you turn up normally then?
Well, let's say I was flying at 10 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. I'd get there at probably 9 o'clock. So it gives me half an hour before boarding starts.
Wow. Yeah.
And to be fair, last year there was only one flight, which I nearly missed. And that was my own fault, because I was sat next to the gate with my headphones on, listening to whatever, and was just so relaxed that it was my last... that I'd just finished my last tournament of the year. And...
You nearly missed your plane.
I just wasn't concentrating, and they were calling my name out for about 5 minutes. And I just kind of double-checked the time and actually thought I was flying half an hour later than I was.
Fuck's sake.
And then next minute I know, Mr. Cross, is that you? Oh, yeah, it's me. Well, where have you been? I've been about 50 yards away, just in a world of my own. And then got on the plane and there was like 40, 50 people on a plane which takes 180. And I was just walked on down.
And you held them all up.
Yeah, and I held them all up. So apologies to flight coming from Alicante to Gatwick on about 3rd, 4th December, somewhere last year. My apologies.
Fuck's sake, mate. Fuck's sake. That's such a crossy story. What's been one of your highlights in terms of your tour and in terms of the work?
Probably the actual team I work with.
Okay, why do you say that then?
They're so helpful and just generally such good mates. Coming from my kind of rugby football kind of Paralympic background.
You're not a paraplegic, just to clarify.
No, I've just worked.
We'll get onto your injuries later. We'll get onto
that. And then, like, I'm the youngest in the team, and at the age of...
That's so weird.
At the age of when I joined 24, for me that was quite a big thing because I was...
You're there on your merit.
Yeah. At the age of 23, 22, I was a media manager, and then to go and be... not necessarily the bottom of the ladder, but just the youngest in the team. Like, there's no...
Everyone's at the same point, but it's just an age. Then yeah, it's just like, an age the youngest. Yeah.
Like, and that, for me, was quite a big thing. But then also something that I kind of just enjoyed. So having a team where everybody is older than you, some by a year, some by 5, 6, 7 years, was great that... And they say this in several... parts of life that age is just a number, but it actually is. Like,
in that circumstance,
it didn't matter actually how old I was, because as you said, I was there on merit.
And I've seen how hard you've worked for, whether it be for Halifax Town on placement, whether it be for Bradford Bulls when they were going through all their shit with liquidation, and like the amount of stuff that you've had to deal with, even the work schedule you have with Bradford Bulls, where you weren't exclusively living,
the amount of things I missed
in North Yorkshire. Or
West Yorkshire.
Yeah. I think it would be North West then. The fact that you didn't live here, you would commute from El Porto to Elland, stay in a bed and breakfast. I've had a beer. For 5 days a week, more or less. Go back home on the Friday, have the weekend back at home, and then do it all again week after week in a job where the security of that was not confirmed, and obviously the circumstances are what they are. We won't turn into this whole bashing thing, because I don't think you... There's no point going down that. But the situation being is the fact that you've worked for... And the reason why you did that was because... I know, was because you were actively looking for a job out there that was more permanent, was fixed, and what you wanted to do. And the fact that you found this now, and the fact that you've, you know, just said then that, like, the best thing about it is the team that you work with. Like, that just tells me that you, it was definitely worth the wait to, like, I think it's just, it's the same, like, sort of adage that a lot of people will have, where you got to go through the shit stuff to find the good stuff.
Yeah. Like, if we go...
Unfortunately, you live down south now, but there we go.
Yeah. at the very start, this is like, I'll always probably remember this, but at the very start of uni, so we're going September 2012.
I've slept since then.
Thankfully, we all have. You were sat, so probably first week being a sports, well, being on the sports journalism course, and there's, what, 48 of us sat in this room, and the lecturer goes round, each and every one of us goes, right, what do you want to, what is your dream job to be in? And quite a lot of people saying, oh, yeah, Premier League football club, or to work for my dream football club.
The team you supported. And
yeah,
that.
Whether that's media manager, press officer, in some form of comms or digital content degree. A few people said Formula One, Rugby League, and I think I'm pretty sure I was the only one that said golf, but I remember saying I want to be working in golf, travelling Europe, covering golf.
And look at you, fucking making your dreams come true.
I know. That's why it's pretty corny, but
that's such a you though thing, yeah, because of the whole granddad persona.
Six years later, and it's kind of
I want to tour the world and have a look at it.
The way things
make par things threes happen. Out of par fours, you know.
Yeah, that is.
I'm sorry, I probably just butchered the thing you studied then, but oh well.
Yeah, but this is kind of our relationship, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just the fact that I'm completely oblivious to the idea of whatever it is you do, but I've got a huge appreciation for the fact that you're actually doing it.
True.
But in the same notion there with you, like, you're not well-versed, fair enough to say anyway, you're not well-versed enough, like, in terms of, like, theatre and acting and stuff, but you come watching and go, that was good, that.
Yeah.
And that's all the response I need for you to say that, well done, mate.
Yeah.
There's no point in going into more details about it. It's just the understanding that...
Yeah, like I won't expect you to read 500 words on one of our players who's just won a tournament.
Tiger Woods.
Well, that is... Yeah, but... Yeah. I'll just... Yeah, it's just the simple, what have you done? How was it? Everything go all right? Is that just general kind of checking up?
Yeah, I think when it gets to... when you get to your mid-20s and you get... a little bit later on in life, you don't see people as much, and you're in a position where you have to organize things. I mean, I spoke about this in terms of the podcast with Chris, like the idea of actually going out and sort of hanging out with the people you grew up hanging out with. It takes a lot more effort now that people are starting to settle down, people are moving further away, people are, you know, getting to relationships, getting married, having kids. It takes a lot of time now to organize a meeting of any more than sort of three people, really.
Well this itself, me being here right now, took... Well, we sorted this, what, a month ago? 3 weeks ago?
Around about that, yeah.
Knowing that I'd be up for Easter, I thought, well, I can come across on the Friday night, crash at yours, and we'll work it that way.
Yeah.
And
I think that's... And even still saying that, that's like a compromise anyway, and... In some case, because you've driven all this way, drove all the way back to El Porto, then got a train over here when, like, you didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
But it's the fact that not that we need an excuse to hang out, or not an excuse that we need to sort of do this, but it's something that...
You kind of got to just organise things.
Yeah.
Whereas back at, if you take uni, or when I was just starting off, still working in West Yorkshire, and you're Robber in Huddersfield, it'd be a case where I'd pop over, like... For a night or a weekend or whatever.
We used to try and organise it like more or less once a week just to have one night. Even if it wasn't once a week, it was just a couple of weeks, just at least once a month anyway, to sort of have a little sort of lads night, play a bit of PlayStation, play some FIFA, watch some stupid YouTube videos, and order some food and just have like, just shoot the shit, have a good time.
Yeah.
So obviously we can't do that as often now because Rob lives in Manchester. You live down south, so what is the one of the main differences or similarities you've seen with moving down south then? Because I take it the fact that you are a bit more of a home bird in that you've would always prefer that, and I think it was because it was a safe haven for you, especially when you were traveling back and forth for your Bradford job and stuff. But like, to be someone that is so family orientated as well, I know that you are, and you're very close to your family, and you know, you go and play golf with your dad when you could and stuff like that, and I think that's what sort of shaped you to down the career you have still. So, but to not have that so prolific, thank you, there okay. You go, I've had a beer. Not that be so prolific in your life as much now. Yeah. How do you deal with the north-south divide, or like what's the main differences and similarities?
I'd just go back to your point on kind of the homebird stuff. I used to be like I was quite heavy.
Mm.
Heavy's not the wrong word. Not the right word. I used to be quite a homebird. Probably when I was 18, 19. But then uni kind of that broke me out of it.
Yeah.
And then working Bradford kind of changed a bit because I was back and forth for a bit, and then I got my flat in Halifax. But then since moving down south, it's, I wouldn't say the home bird's completely disappeared, but
it's changed.
It has gone a lot. Like coming back up north is quite a big thing in terms of A, making the time, and B, the actual effort. Now, this weekend, for Easter, I could have quite easily just stayed down south.
Yeah.
But I thought, no, it's a time where my sister's going to be down from where she is up in Lancashire. It's always a chance to see my nan and aunts and uncles and cousins.
The ones from like all over the world?
No, this is just immediate. But the ones from all over the world. There's another big family due in a couple of weeks.
Crossy's got a family on every continent, honestly.
It used to. I don't think I do anymore. It's because I can't. No, I don't think I do anymore. I used to.
I've got an Uncle Tony who lives in South Africa.
Don't go down that line. We'll be here for hours.
Your lineage, the cross lineage.
Yeah, well, I think down the big difference with north and south, money.
Mm.
Everything is so much more expensive down there. Friendliness? Yeah, I'd say friendliness of people.
In what sense? Is it less friendly, more friendly?
Up north, people talk to each other.
Mm.
Like, you can be on a train, you could be at a takeaway.
That's two exclusive places where you hang out. I'm either on a train or I'm at a takeaway.
The tube is a weird place. Like, I'm quite happily like laughing and joking and chatting on the tube.
Yeah.
But everybody else is kind of like, nope, gotta be silent. Can't say anything. Can't make eye contact.
Headphones in,
reading the paper, reading the book.
All these people being fucking strangers, Cross, honestly. They're probably listening to this podcast now.
On the commute now. At 7:10, Jubilee Line.
Fuck's sake.
like, the North is... I think the North's a bit more friendly in terms of general people, like, if you're in, like, public spaces and things. But the South has got... It's actually surprising me. Like, parts of the South...
In what sense?
Well, around Surrey, which is where I currently live, I always pictured that as being quite... it is quite posh in some places. And there's a lot of money in it. But I didn't think it'd be anywhere near as green in terms of all the green areas, the parks, the lakes. And that, I love it for that because that reminds me a bit of home.
Yeah.
Because when you've got the Wirral, you've got the Mersey, the Dee, you've got Hoy Lake, West Kirby, you've kind of got all those areas where you are in close proximity of
New Brighton.
Of the sea. Yeah, are, even at New Brighton. And I suppose that gives you a sense of relaxation, but a kind of, it's open.
I think we sort of take it for granted because we're in this like little nook in the middle of North Wales and Liverpool area where a lot of people haven't really heard of it as well.
Yeah.
So it's, if you ever go there, then people maybe only know it for one or two reasons or whatever, but there's a stereotypical view of that. It's like, oh, well, it's a lot of, like, maybe footballers, like, will live around that area because it's Cheshire and stuff like that, but there's some really rough areas as well.
Like going up the Wirral, if you're West Wirral, then it's kind of Heswall and Hoylake, and it's pretty nice. Your East Wirral, you're Birkenhead and Prenton.
Yeah.
But then that's my kind of family upbringing is Birkenhead and Prenton and Bromborough. So
just in case you don't know, it's actually pronounced Birkenhead, but because we're from the area that we are.
Birkenhead. Yeah.
That's what we said last time with Chris as well. Birkenhead.
But then, like, around Surrey, there's places which are quite similar to Cheshire.
In terms of the scenery?
The scenery. It's just like leafy green, real nice houses.
So it's familiar, but also it's different enough to sort of feel like you're elsewhere.
Yeah, like you'd find like a real nice country pub in Cheshire, and it'd be, let's say, £2.80, £3 for a pint.
I knew you were going to say a decent
ale. You go down into Surrey, you find like a real nice country pub, and you're looking at like £4.
Fuck's sake.
And you're like,
mate, we bought 4 cans of Desperados for how much? And you got a Milky Way bar as well.
Was it like £6? £7?
Yeah.
Alright, look, about £7.
They're 500ml cans as well, so.
You're getting a good amount for your buck, aren't you?
Yeah, you got.
Not getting ripped out.
You got best part of a pint in there.
Yeah.
And you're paying, what, £6 for that? And you can get one drink down south.
Yeah, it is expensive, but it's nice. Yeah, it's good.
Do you have a preference then, prefer north or south? Like, take into account, obviously, the.
I'd say give it a couple more years.
So you can't make your mind up just yet?
No, I think I've only been down south for a year. Actually for 2 months of that, I was actually back up here. But we'll get onto that later.
I was going to say what? Oh, wait, yeah. You and your fucking injuries.
But then part of that time I was working away.
So when you're working away, how do you manage those workloads? Like,
in terms of
the job that you do. So say, like, you know, we mentioned about the travelling and like the scheduling and that side of thing, but like in terms of being in a foreign country, trying to manage workloads and go on, fucking get him.
It's like being back in the port.
There we go. I live on a main road where all 9 times out of 10 there's
a sirens are going past.
Yeah. Bloody hellfire. Workloads. So, like, how do you manage a workload in a different country? Because you'd be in the most beautiful place, like, in Europe or wherever, and all you want, or, like, the mentality of, say, someone like myself is, like, you know, it's a fucking holiday, it's a vacation, it's a chance to not do anything. Being in those scenarios, and you're there to work, how can you manage a workload when you're in a fucking beautiful, picturesque area, where you're in, like, beautiful golf courses as well, that all the greens and that are all like tip top shape, and it's just like, I'm here to do a job. Fuck. I wish I was on that back nine right now.
I think you touched on it before. That is the dedication to the job. You, at the end of the day, you've got to know you're there to do a job. You're, as much as you want to go and have fun and enjoy it, and yeah, you do enjoy it. But at the end of the day, that is your job. Let's say, that week, your 9 to 5 is sat in part of the clubhouse on a laptop with a wonderful golf course potentially 100 yards away. But that is, so the workload part of it is organisation. You've got to be, and preparation as well. You go into it knowing that you've got things like a list to tick off almost. So you go, well, that's how I treat it anyway. It can be a day-by-day process of ticking off articles, social media posts, chatting with players, but it all works towards a bigger picture. You're a cog in the small wheel of a tournament. And for that tournament to function,
you need to be on your game.
Yeah, you've got to be working. That is kind of the long and short of it. Like, your involvement as little as you may think it is, it's not.
It contributes to a bigger picture. It
contributes so much. Because at the end of the day, and some of the tournaments we go to, we are the news in terms of if we don't tweet it, if we don't show a video, if we don't write about it.
It didn't happen.
Well, it happened, but how did that person get to that score? How did they win? It comes through you. And
it was
pointed out to me the other day by one of the guys at work, and I'd never actually thought of it that way. Mm. It wasn't necessarily taking it for granted of how the news got out there, but it is that if we say it is in our releases and our articles, that's how it is. Okay. It's good.
Is it quite stressful though, considering you're in those nice environments and you have to deal with such an intense, up to date schedule? So like, if someone hits a fucking birdie on like a par four,
yeah, you've got to.
You're like, oh shit! You gotta write it down and get out of there quick.
That is the way of reporting it. It's not like I was so used to working in football and rugby that it's, for instance, doing a 90-minute match on Twitter for football. It's minute-by-minute update. Completely different in golf. You've got a round can take anywhere from 2.5 hours to 4 or 5 hours. So you're not tweeting every...
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. You're giving more of a general score update from the leaderboard, not necessarily from that player, unless that player is streaming ahead several shots clear. But it's also knowing what you've got to target it to the audience. The audience wants to know what the leading groups are doing, what the leading players are doing, and not necessarily what somebody's doing if they're towards the bottom of the leaderboard.
Yeah, you're talking about
you can direct them there, like through your social media.
I was going to say, it's going to come back to social media, isn't it? Because even if you follow one of those players that may not necessarily be having the best round of golf that day, they're in the tournament, you can still follow...
You can still find them.
Yeah, and still see where they're up to and see how they're getting on, even though they may not be as prolific as the people in like the top three or four that are in contention for a championship or contention for, you know, winning this tournament. The fact that we have social media so that everyone is individual but also part of a collective group just sort of mirrors the work that's involved with the people that aren't necessarily players, but they need to be the ones to get that information out to the people that are interested, that are our fans. So you're part, like you said, you're part of that. You're one of the cogs in the wheel of that to keep it going around. But like I said, what's the most, well, in that case, then taking that on board, what's the most stressful part of that? What the fuck was that? What's the most stressful part of your job? And why do you think it is the most stressful part of your job?
Good question.
I know. I thought I'd put you on the spot.
I know. I'm now thinking. The cogs in my head are turning.
A lot of cog talk in these past two podcasts, I've noticed.
So much.
So many cogs. Crossy cogs. Get them now. They cost not a lot.
I think making sure that the tone of everything is right, from whether that's a tweet to the article, it can be, in any job, it can be quite easy to upset people. And you've got to make sure that whatever you're saying is A, factually correct, but B, isn't going to offend anyone.
But I think because of the type of social media and the sort of generation.
Everything's so reactive now.
Yeah, it's very easy to easy to trigger people. It's easy to be triggered.
Yeah,
and people are standing up and not taking as much bullshit maybe as they used to. And people are hypersensitive.
It's the PC culture, which is now full in effect.
How do you feel about that?
Oh, good question. That's a really good question.
Like, I mean, because it's
there's a fine line. There is a fine line, because there's parts where you we can have a laugh and a joke literally about anything, and off air it does go quite far. There's a line, and then there's
Rob.
And yeah, there's our little group, and Rob will admit to this.
He'll be fuming when he hears this.
He'll love it.
Like,
but we all know the line. Yeah. But then, when you come to a working environment, that line that everybody talks about is much more lower.
The way that I talk to you now, it's not how I'm going to talk to a customer at work tomorrow, unless it's be someone that I know. Like, but then you completely change your approach to people, especially when, even if you get to a point where you build up a rapport, you can also lax a little bit and you can have a bit of a laugh and a joke. But you've got to
work out where that line is with that person.
Exactly. It'll vary depending on who you're talking to all the time.
I think that line now varies on generations, varies on age, varies on gender. There's a line within everything. And
it's not our job to find the line, though.
No, it isn't. No,
it's our job to...
The line at the end of the day is everybody's personal opinion.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah,
and if somebody's personal opinion is far more relaxed to somebody else, well then, yes, there are going to be issues. Because you could say one thing that would be absolutely fine with me, but you could say it to somebody else and that would seriously offend them. It's said as the same tone, the same kind of delivery. And I think for me personally, it's to do with your background. If you come up from, let's say, a working class background, then your line as such is going to be far more different to somebody who's grown up in a family which has been well off with money. I don't think education does come into it, but I think it's a class. It's also a class thing.
It's due to your upbringing as well, in terms of value, a lot of values that are implicated in yourself from a young age.
I'd throw region in there as well. Like the wit of, and I've noticed this quite a bit from now living down. The northwest wit is so much more different to the south. I can say something and it will go completely over people's head. Whereas I can say up here and people get it straight away.
Sometimes a blessing in disguise, maybe. Depending on what you're saying.
You know me. It's always safe.
Oh, yes. PG cross.
PG cross. there is a fine line. And I think with, as we said before, social media, people jump onto things straight away.
And I think we've got a responsibility to not necessarily be reactive to things that people have said as well. Like, if someone has a claim that is very triggering, it's very easy to get worked up and be impulsive in your reaction and just go off the rails and just be like explosive, whereas the bigger thing to do really would be to say, I don't agree with what you're saying, fair enough, you've got your own opinion, and just wipe your hands with it. Not to try and rise to people. It's not a competition of whose argument is better or whose argument is louder, as much as, like, I mean, it just translates into other politics as well, like the idea.
Well, I'm going to go full circle on this and go right back to the start of the podcast. That whole kind of, prospect and how it works out, if you actually take a wider look at it and look at both sides, like I was saying with how I kind of...
The level-headedness.
If everybody... And I know this is in a way the perfect world, but if everybody stopped for 5-10 seconds, saw it from both sides, then gave the judgment instead of jumping straight down somebody's throat and saying, "Oh, this is what it is," and in a way, this is what it is, when actually that's just your opinion. It might not actually be what it is.
Yeah, there's a level of maturity that comes with having that. So do you think you had that maturity at a younger age, really, despite the life experience not have had up until more recently?
And I think that can, without sounding big-headed, because I think it can be construed as being that, I think I was probably quite mature.
This is the thing, you're not arrogant.
No.
So it's like...
I try not to be.
No, you're not arrogant. Like, and I wouldn't have, like, in terms of words to describe Crossy, I wouldn't put you down as an arrogant person. You're completely opposite of that. Like, you're... is someone who is very level-headed and is confident in their own opinions, but it's not a case that you're, like I said earlier, you're not trying to make a louder argument than anybody else. It's like...
I'm just saying how I see it.
Yeah, and nine times out of ten, the way you're seeing it is right down the middle, seeing both sides of it, and it's something that, you know, it's... No one's there saying, well, pick a fucking side then, you twat. You know what I mean?
Because
it's coming from an educated and...
Thought out decision.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about your injuries, because you're fucking fragile.
broken in slightly a few places.
Not emotionally, really, from what I know, anyway.
Just physically.
In which case, you may be hiding a lot, maybe, from me, I don't know. But we've never really delved into that. Maybe we could do that another time. But in terms of your injuries, you had a skiing accident during first year or second year of uni?
First year of uni.
First year of uni. And may I be the first one to say that this has completely affected your life going forward?
That's a great way to sum it up. That is brilliant.
Yeah, this is me being right down the middle and analytical. Yeah. So,
I wouldn't say it's affected my life going forward. It just comes up in so many conversations.
It does.
Without kind of meaning to.
Normally, it's the butt of a joke a lot of the time in our friendship group anyway. So.
Yeah, 2012.
So just for the people listening at home, just talk through what happened in this scenario, or maybe I'll pretense a little bit. So you were part of
the Snow Sports Society
at a university, part of HUSSE is the abbreviation.
Huddersfield University Ski and Snow, I don't know what the Institute.
There we go. So you go on a skiing trip, which
I saved up for during freshers, yeah.
You saved up with your student loan to pay for this skiing trip in Italy, northern Italy, between the Alps and
Sestriere.
Yeah, and so you go to Italy
after a 20, probably nearly 30 hours on a coach.
Yeah,
going over from Dover,
driving all the way there.
So we got. I may as well tell it. So we get there to the resort.
Actually, I don't laugh. It's actually quite bad. But
well, I can laugh at it, which is the main point. If I couldn't laugh at it, then it'd be it is serious. But if I couldn't laugh at it, then it'd be pretty bad. So we got over to the resort at like late afternoon on the Saturday. Went out Saturday night. Then everybody got up Sunday, got the skis, got the helmets, got kind of a briefing on some of the best routes.
Had you been skiing before at this point?
Yeah, I went with sixth form in
2 years prior.
Yeah, it would have been, yeah.
Maybe three. But
And I've been a couple of indoor slopes in Manchester.
Mm-hmm. So it's not like you're a novice. You've skied.
No, I've skied before. I wouldn't say I was top of the range or anything, but I was comfortable.
Competent.
Yeah. And so we go off up the slope at, 12 o'clock on a Sunday. And we're literally coming down a run, and there was me and three other guys. Two were snowboarding, one was skiing. And we just decided to go down this kind of run. We didn't see what colour it was. Turns out it was a black run.
Could you just describe what a black run is?
So the black run, if I'm correct, is one away from Olympic. or pretty much the Olympic level. It's severely steep, and it's normally not as flat as you'd want it to be.
Oh dear!
So I was going down this run. I'd probably thrown in probably three, maybe four turns. So I'm not even off the top of this run.
Okay.
And there's what's called moguls down the left side. Now moguls are purposely built, almost humps, where you kind of do quick turns over them.
Okay.
And I didn't really see these as I was coming down, so I was turning and then clipped one on the outside of one. So as I turned, the left ski went over the mogul, and then as I'm coming back across the slope and then turning again, I had too much speed. And the right ski twisted, and without going into too much graphic detail, the left ski came off like it should do because of the way the bindings are around the boot, whereas the right ski stayed on, unfortunately, and just twisted the whole of my lower leg, to which I was lying on the slope. I was facing the wrong way, then turned myself over and realised at that point something was wrong.
Yeah, because your leg was still facing the other way.
Correct.
fuck's sake.
And I didn't know any Italian at this point, apart from...
No, ciao, bella.
I knew like the basic kind of hello and goodbye. And these, so I'm kind of, I don't think I was screaming in pain because of the shock that just set in.
Did it hurt though?
Yeah. And two of the guys came, all the guys came over and like, oh, what have you done? And kind of trying to work out, then realised that my knee and lower leg just wasn't facing the right way. And the, you call them marshals, local Italian marshals came over. And they're like, just speak it, well, saying, do you speak Italian? And I was like, no. And they're like, French? No. And after 5 years of German at high school, the only thing I could remember is...
You turned to German?
I ended up speaking German and just said, mein Knie tut weh, which is my knee is sore in German.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I've told you that.
No.
And just said that in like fluent German. And amazingly, he understood and looked straight down. And he was convinced that I actually shattered my leg.
Oh, shit.
And was, because he looked at it and then looked straight. And I remember the look of him looking at his colleague and was like, yeah, this doesn't look good. Because there was a little kind of mini medical center on site on the slope.
Yeah.
Which for any kind of small injuries, and I suppose dislocation of the knee in a way is a small injury, you'd go there. Whereas this was like,
it's not, but
yeah, but
in the kind of scheme of things.
And they were like, yeah, this isn't great, and took me to the main hospital, which was I think some like 100 kilometers away.
Jesus.
Yeah, and so I was then put on one of these kind of buggies on the back of a snowmobile, bounced down the slope, and taken off into... I still don't know where it was. But yeah, I can...
You got airlifted?
No. Just on like... It's like a stretcher which attaches to a snowmobile. And just taken off on that. And then I was in the hospital and literally got it put back in place without any painkillers
or anything.
I think I had maybe a bit of morphine coming off the slope just because they knew it was going to be quite a bumpy ride.
Yeah.
But then it was at least 2 hours from two or three hours from the slope to the hospital, and yeah, I can still picture the whole of like the room. There was me, then the Italian doctor who spoke a bit of English. The only English-speaking nurse who was kind of talking me to try and prepare me for them putting my knee back in place. And then there was three people at the bottom of the bed, and it was like three different movements of the knee being shifted along and then smashed back down.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was the knee injury of 2012.
John Cross made an appearance.
He did, yeah. He
rubbing his hands.
He came over.
That's a shout-out to Adam.
He came over, the insurance company flew him out 2 days later and then flew both of us back. Still, as my mum says, the best 25 quid we've ever spent on travel insurance.
That's not bad,
because
is it?
We got what? I got
the turnaround of that to get
I
you back.
I think I got something like 80% of the holiday back.
Really?
Through the insurance company, yeah. Which is quite good.
Doesn't replace your knee though, does it, Cross?
No, that's still...
How, so we make an ongoing joke then, because if every time Crossy does anything sort of athletic.
Going back to the granddad thing, this is why I'm called granddad.
Because he's such an old fucking man that he's fucking crippled. He needs a bloody walking stick. He's got a thyroid problem as well.
Which is a lie. On record.
Should we talk about Berlin? Just briefly then. So we went to Berlin. Was it last year? It was last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, January 2018.
So we went to Berlin, and Crossy at the time was had a few issues with his foot and his knee, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, it was with the foot, yeah.
And you've had surgery since then.
Yeah.
Last, the Christmas just gone, so you were...
Correct.
So you spent 2 months off there with your foot in a cast. You're literally just a walk-in.
Hey, just... Yeah, but that's 2012 and 2018.
Yeah, so you're a new man now.
It's slowly getting fixed.
Oh, good. About time.
Yeah.
So we go to Berlin, and four of us go in, me, Rob, Adam and Crossy. So we get to the airport, flying via EasyJet to Berlin from Manchester, and Crossy finds himself because there's rows of three in terms of the seating arrangement, so we knew that one of us was going to be sat next to someone else that we didn't know. So Crossy said, oh, I don't mind, I'll do that. So Crossy sits down, and he wanted to make it so that he could have the aisle seat because he's a very large gentleman.
Yeah, because you want the leg room. Anybody
he wanted
over
to sit on the aisle, swing his legs
leg
out. Because of his foot, though, it kind of made sense. So between me, Rob and Adam, we made the joke that they had a thyroid problem.
No, the thyroid, to my knowledge, is in the neck. And for some... I don't know. I still don't get this.
So in a similar voice that we sort of opened it, was like, hello, my name's Andrew. Do you mind if I have the aisle seat? I have a terrible thyroid problem, you know. So that just became an ongoing joke. So we then went to the point where we used Google Translate and sort of found what the German equivalent was for thyroid problem.
And for also, my large friend has fallen in the Wasser.
Hilfe, mein großes Freund in der Wasser gefallen.
So fluent.
They're the only sort of phrases I know now, but Berlin was a great time.
Great city.
It was
really,
the first proper
really
sort of holiday that we've gone on as well, and I think that even though it was like a short break and on a weekend, it was like...
It was so good.
It's something that I'd love to go back again, but obviously the thing is now, because of our schedules...
Going back to what you were saying earlier, it's to get you trying to organise something with... Everybody
we tried to organise
a
trip to Amsterdam earlier this year and it just sort of fell flat on its arse and just didn't happen.
Yeah, it is difficult. It's literally like everybody has to commit to a date, even a year in advance.
Yeah.
Just so that it happens.
That's the sort of notice you have to put in nowadays. So obviously we mentioned about your injury. In terms of the mentality of that involved with it, so coming back from an injury, not necessarily for a performance or for a... More for your general well-being, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You're someone that does go to the gym or still attempts to go to the gym now. Not saying that you can't, but just because of your work schedule more so. Trying to find the time to get a workout in, and something, it's a route that I've gone down in sort of the past 2 months, trying to find time and adjust and stuff like that to go to the gym. Like, how does your mentality change, like with physio? Because I know you did some physiotherapy with your foot.
I'm still on the physio.
So how does that change your perspective on in terms of progress, actually? I'll sort of phrase it that way.
I've said it a few times on this. It's the bigger picture. Knowing that me having the operation on my ankle over Christmas, the first few months are going to be difficult. Few weeks were difficult.
It's the long-term impact.
And that's how the doctor kind of stressed it to me. She was like, look, this won't be perfect for like the next few months, but later down the line, you'll be glad that you had it done. And it's to go into it with an open mind, knowing that it's going to help me down the line. Not being able to go to the gym and do what I actually want to do is difficult. So at work, we play a Tuesday lunchtime five-a-side, and not be able to play that is a bit annoying.
Because it's a sport that you...
It's a sport I love. It's a sport I've played since I was three or four. And knowing that I can't, even at the moment, I can't properly kick a ball because I can't weight bear to that degree. I played... Last Saturday I played my first full round of golf since the operation, and after 7, 8, 9 holes, my foot was completely... It was in pain, and it just wasn't giving me that kind of function that it should be giving me.
Just in general, or just in a sporting aspect?
In probably both, actually. In terms of the golfing aspect, it's the weight distribution, it's the ability to be able to turn and push and change the weight through your
distribution.
But in the actual everyday aspect, I was hobbling like mad for the following couple of hours. It's the mental, like, you know, my mentality, it's very relaxed, so relaxed that I'm horizontal. But it's always to look at the bigger picture and realize that, and this is another corny line, but look, my situation isn't as bad as others. And knowing that this.
It's not corny at all. I think it's you're very much a realist in that.
Yeah, I'm a realist. Yeah.
Like, there's no point in stressing yourself out over things, and I think that's one of the. I mean, going back to just sort of maybe bringing it full circle, like the idea that you have me and Rob, who can be quite erratic people, whether it be through impulse or whether it be through humour or bounce, and we bounce quite well off one another. I've always said, Rob, that regardless of how long I've known him, he's always been my silly friend, my funny friend that I've known for ages, that I can always rely on for a good time, always. And but what you sort of bring to the dynamic of the group is that you sort of rein us in a little bit, and it's like when we need to have those sort of deeper talks and stuff like that, you're someone that we can both turn to. I mean, we can turn to each other as well, but I don't think we get the same thing we would if we speak to you.
Yeah.
And the fact that you have that sort of all-seeing sort of bigger picture perspective and realist.
I'm not Bran.
Game of Thrones. You've got that fucking third eye raven shit going on.
I think it's just the way I've always tackled anything, that I've always been able to kind of, if I want to go and do something, I'll throw myself into it.
Mm.
And throw myself into it and then work out what to do afterwards if I can see it going wrong. But I mean, there hasn't been many situations like that. But in terms of the foot, I just know that it needed to be sorted, and this was unfortunately the only way to get it sorted.
You sort of got that organised to be done, like, remember about this time last year? They sort of started the ball on it anyway, trying to get it. Yeah, so that's part of
nine months
to get it
organised. I had physio on it for a while, and then before I got the new job down south, they were like, we're looking to kind of book you in, and I was like, well, can you actually hold back on that? Because I don't want it stopping.
In the middle of like a probation job. Or something like that.
No, he was in the middle of getting this job and moving down south, and I knew that I needed to settle before I potentially took a couple of months sat out working from home. It has worked out quite well.
I mean, again, well, I'll just draw back to it. It's no disrespect to Rob or disrespect to you saying, like, you can still be a silly friend and Rob, I can still have serious conversations with. It's not like I'm trying to sort of pin you guys against one another. But
that's our personalities.
I don't want to, like, maybe offend anyone or anything like that. But it's, you know, every person that you sort of interact with will have their own ways of being, and that will contribute to your life in some way or the other. And sometimes you need more of one than the other or less of one than the other. So it's just knowing and being conscious of yourself, like who to talk to about certain things, but also not getting attached to it in a way that means that, oh, I can only talk to Crossy about this thing. I can speak to both of you. I think we've probably got three or four different group chats that just include all three of us, whether it be with you know, different topics, like being like sort of the stimulus for those groups. Like this group chat is for this group chat is for that, and this is, we don't necessarily, I mean, we'll switch between the two, but it's like if someone were to drop a message in one of them, you'd be like, oh, this is regarding this topic, or if they were to drop it in that one, this is regarding that
and it's
topic.
Almost some of those as well, as if you dropped a message in one of those groups, you know, it's actually a bit more serious.
There's a severity that comes with it. It's like, oh, he hasn't put it in the spam chat, so so we ended last episode with a quick fire round with Chris, and I feel like it's going to now become a trend on all of these ones. So
it's a good kind of finishing.
Yeah, just nice little quick snappy thing, and we've been going now for over an hour.
There's no surprise. I was actually looking at the clock, and I'm thinking, this got part one, part two involved.
We'll do a split series, so we'll do a quick fire round. So, real quick off the bat, favorite song.
Come on, that's not going to be real quick.
It is.
You know the amount of music I listen to.
Yeah, I know. In that case, favorite traveling playlist CD. Was that even harder?
It's just because I've got one I update all the time. Just it's literally like a starred playlist on Spotify. But then I've got.
Favourite film?
Inception's probably up there.
Why?
The music in it's great. The score the score from Hans Zimmer is fantastic.
Okay.
Kind of the overall idea of it.
Do you know what? As soon as I said quick fire, I knew we'd be fucking here for 10 minutes.
You're speaking to me. I can go on for...
Bloody Eeyore over here with his fucking...
All right, I'll try and give you like one sentence answers. Inception. The score's great.
Cool. There we go. That was an element of quick fire. Favourite gig?
Foles, Liverpool Olympia, probably about 2 or 3 years ago.
Okay. Why?
A, because Giannis jumped off the balcony and it was just brilliant, straight into the crowd. And seeing them live is just fantastic.
Sweet. Now giving you some time. Favourite song? Favourite band?
Favourite band is either Foles or probably at the moment Tame Impala. But then I'd also throw the Beatles in there.
Oh, old school. Throwback.
A bit old school, yeah.
Favourite album?
Ooh. At the moment, I'm currently loving Foles' new stuff.
I'll take that.
But I could probably choose... Yeah, I could go on. That's the problem.
Most notable memory from a music festival? Because I asked that to Chris as well, and he was...
It's a good question. But it's definitely not quickfire.
No, it's not. But you're trying to remember the stuff.
Well, I can remember one of the guys at Leeds Fest. There were several, pretty much on the Monday morning.
Oh, Leeds Fest Olympics.
Olympics with the leftover cans of Skol.
That was grim.
Playing pretty much baseball with them, using the kind of the tent poles as pole vaults, and then also Richie and Elmo, ripping out the bottom of the tent and then kind of walking underneath as the like tent was moving. Yeah. And when you're completely delirious at like six,
you've had 4 or 5 days without sleep
in a field in Leeds.
You've had 4 or 5 days without any sort of sleep.
You haven't a clue what's going on. You've been up all Sunday night.
And you've just seen this pop-up tent walking by itself and then just dropping suddenly like a turtle.
Yeah.
Or a tortoise. Favourite song? I won't leave until you give me a favourite song. And even if it's just the one that you're listening to at the moment.
I'm going to have to open my Spotify. Right, it won't take long. Stop moaning.
ASMR.
At the moment, Sunday by Foles. There's a moment in it at about, I think it's about 2:30.
Does he go?
No.
Well, that's Alt J.
That
was a good gig we went to, Alt J in Leeds. They were alright.
Is that Leeds? Was that Manchester?
That was Leeds.
I've seen him twice. Yeah, that'll be on. Yeah, there's a moment in Sunday by Foles about 2:30 in, and it does, the tempo just changes, and it's great. See, now you're reminding me of Chris Rea, clicking away.
Chris Rea?
Driving home for Christmas.
Oh, God.
Just because there's several videos of me.
Oh, also, yeah. I don't know if I'm going to... If I post up something like this, there's a gif of Crossy from Berlin.
There's a fantastic gif of me.
Where he is moving his head back and forth. It's on my Twitter, so go and check it out.
It was your pinned tweet for probably several months.
I'm going to have to put it back as my pinned tweet just for the sake of this, but... Basically, this gif goes with any song. Any song.
Not if it's a really morbid song.
No, it goes with any song. Doesn't matter. But the way he's bobbing his head, honestly, put that to any song.
Top bunk.
And I've got a special request.
Go on.
What are you doing?
That's Crumble. It's not me.
Wait, Crumble. What are you doing? Come here. We've got a special request, haven't we? Come here. Come here, then. Come on. Oi. Say hello. There we go.
Right on cue.
Well done. You're right. Oh, okay. Off you pop. There you go. Special request. Elmo from podcast number...
Episode
number 3.
Mummy and I might know each other.
Oh, yeah, of course you do.
We go back quite far.
We go back. He had a special request, given the bassy tones of your voice.
I think it's because maybe I was one of the first during kind of high school for my voice to seriously sound this low.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I think it was something like 10 or 11 that this happened. Yeah.
But basically, he wanted to request that you just say one phrase, and we'll have this as for the outro now. We'll bring it to a close. Just wanted you to say, drop the bass.
Jack Bowler, thank you for having me on this podcast. From this podcast. I've messed up! Right, we're going to have to edit this. This is a cut. Jack Bowler, thank you for having me on your podcast.
Oh, before we go, actually... It's worth noting that the name of this podcast.
Oh, are you?
Came from you. We should probably put this at the start, but the name "Don't Be a Stranger" was just in brief conversation between you and I, and I was trying to think of like what to call it, and I think you just because it was a situation where obviously we conversed back and forth quite frequently, but I think it was a point where we hadn't spoken quite a lot like previous.
Yeah, and you were talking about kind of wanting to speak to people that you've known for years and kind of get back in touch and things like that.
And get to know them a bit better and sort of figure out what they've been up to in the times that I haven't seen them and seeing why they are the way they are and now and stuff. But and that's where sort of the phrase was like, all right, mate, don't be a stranger. And then I was like, oh, that's it. That is the name. That's what it should be because it's just sort of summarizes the concept that it's trying to encourage people not to be strangers to one another, even if you've had, you know, 5+ years apart or whatever. And that's where that sort of originates from that conversation. So you will, you'll always have a place on this podcast in some way, shape, or form.
Thank you, sir.
But anyway, Elmo wants you to drop the bass. So go ahead and drop that bass.
Drop the bass.
There we go. That was for you, Elmo. Thanks very much for coming on, dude.
No problem, anytime.
I hope you sleep tight. I'm going to drop crumble on your face in your sleep just to see if you pop your knee out just for bants.
Sleeping on the sofa in Mr. Bowler's abode.
That's a day bed, I'll have you know.
I helped you build this.
Day bed. Oh, fighter of the night bed. Oh. Okay, anyway, we're rambling. So, thanks again, dude. Sleep tight. Sweet dreams.
And don't be a stranger.
Don't be a stranger, you soft twat.